So a very warm welcome into the online Dharma hall today. And I noticed that a few people maybe came in accidentally unmuted, so I quickly muted everybody. But I just wanted to kind of name that I'd done that so that you can feel very invited to consciously unmute yourself. It's fully welcomed and encouraged, actually, maybe even to be unmuted. Just as if I were leading an in-person session, I certainly wouldn't ask you all to be kind of pristinely silent. But I also recognise that it's possible to come in without realising that you're muted or unmuted. As with much of this path, there isn't really a right or wrong. But perhaps once we bring a degree of consciousness to it, we can see that it's actually empowering. Maybe there are a few things we wouldn't do consciously or unconsciously, like scream in rage or something, but we might need to find that capacity to do as much as we can consciously. So with that said, really, once again, just welcoming everyone into the session. Of course, there's still a few more arriving as we're just beginning. And as we feel ourselves welcomed, not just by me, but by all of us here, we can take our time and even have a little look around and see. For me, it's more than one screen's worth of beings here. I can acknowledge, whether that's by name there or by face and location, and just having a sense of the community that we are, that's gathered here together with the shared interest of our exploration of existence, our cultivation of lovely qualities of heart and mind. And with that, those of you who feel able to, really feel invited to use the chat to say hello if you like. You can name where you are. That can be of interest and perhaps even surprise for us at times to see quite how spread out, or perhaps you find out someone's just next door that you didn't realize. So all of that is welcome. Anything you also want to say about the condition? So yeah, drizzly, muggy, those kinds of qualities are quite alive for those of us tuning in from the UK. Yeah, anything about your internal weather that you also want to share? Tenderness, the ease. And yeah, really, all aspects of all of us, wherever we are, is welcome through the doors of the online Dharma hall. And just two or three things. So yeah, feel free to be muted or unmuted. Feel free to have your video on or off. Feel free to look at the screen or not look at the screen. Whatever it is that feels, supportive for you. And yeah, just making that conscious decision. If you prefer, I can see for some of you, I can see some greenery. I can see, some books, some plants, some paintings. Maybe they would be nicer things to look at. Because most of what's happening here, once you've kind of confirmed for yourself you're not alone, there are other beings here. It might be nice to rest the eyes on something that's easier to look at than the appearance of depth, just this flat screen with its light shining at us. And thank goodness for the technology, but also thank goodness for our capacity to turn away from it at times. Yeah, I think we all recognize that dance. And what we're going to have in the session is we'll start off with a relatively quiet half-hour meditation. I'm going to drop in a few things and kind of like speak about that afterwards in the reflection. But something I'd like to mention in general, sometimes some of us like to kind of question the use of the word meditation, if you kind of trace it back in its history, it kind of actually means to think about, you know, meditations on such and such, or someone's deep contemplations on something. The word that would probably be more appropriate if we were allowed to retranslate it nowadays from the Buddha's time would be a cultivation. You know, the planting of a seed, the tending of the growth, the enriching the conditions that allow something to come into being. You know, the culture of beings, the agriculture, and the cultivation, related words. There's something we're bringing into being. And so with that in mind, what would you want to bring into being? What would you want to plant the seeds for? What would you wish to tend the growth of? And maybe that's something you would value seeing emerge in your own heart or mind or vision, awareness. Maybe it's something in your nearby surroundings. Or maybe it's more to do with the global politics of our time. And if you wish to, it can be a real gift to share that with each other. We have beings coming in from Sweden and Spain and Germany, Wales, England, Belgium. And together we can just sprinkle in our wishes that we wish to cultivate, just to have another sharing. What would you like to develop, support, encourage? So where it's a communal meditation, that's a communal cultivation. I'll name a few. Peaceful gratitude. And before I name a few more, I just want to name something we can do as a practice. So metta practice, some of you will know, the repeating of phrases that we offer qualities to beings. That really works when we really feel the meaning in the words. So when we say, you know, may you be happy, it's good to really feel the you and the happy. It's yet you, this being, I'm thinking of you and I'm wishing you happy, and happy feels like this, that's what it means. And we can do that same thing, it's this verbal fabrication, cultivation in our practice, when we hear the word non-separateness. What would that be like? Maybe we just get an intimation, or maybe we get a real visceral, yes, that's what it would be like. Either way, we can make this a practice this way. Or noticing and opening to building more joy. A lovely kind of three-step process. Noticing. Is there joy around here that I could notice? Is it something we can open to, something we can build more of? Joy. Or on the other side, you kind of have this sense of ease, peacefulness. So let's bring whatever it is that we've heard from others or felt arise within ourselves, let's bring that as a meditation. Let's bring that in the way we pay attention to our experience. Let's tune into that, let's feel it. So the first step with a meditation is deciding what posture most well befits our cultivation that we wish to see. And we'll have half an hour. And as I say, I'll drop in a few reminders. And after settling into the posture. It's good to have some period of time getting to know the body, getting to know the heart, getting to know the mind. So how is the body right now? Is there anything it needs to be more comfortable, more at ease? And can we give that, allow for that, encourage that? How does the heart show up right now? We might recognize in that area of experience, we might call the heart, which might be a resonance in the chest area, or it might be just that frequency of experience we call the heart. Or it may mean nothing to us as a concept. If we feel something, how do we feel it is? Does it need anything? Or just to pause with it, to hold it. And how's the head doing? Or the thinking, ideation. Is there agitation? Is there dullness? Just recognize. Also soothe, maybe a long out breath as if it's pouring through the head when there's agitation. Maybe a brightening when there's dullness. An in-breath, a lightening up, a change in the posture. And I'll be silent for a while now, but feel free to check in any time with the body, the heart, the mind, condition of the being as it expresses. Soothing and easing or brightening, enlivening as you see fit. And as a background support, maybe choosing to be with the breath or body sensations or sounds as a ground for the attention. And as a ground for your intention, your cultivation. Again, really bringing consciousness alive through your attention. Finding what you notice. Many times by kind of habit, energy, we end up grabbing onto something or rolling down through a story of getting or getting rid of. Many times we find ourselves reactive to what's here, we're kind of pushing it away, turning away, trying to escape. There's a middle between those extremes. It might be as a particular of that cultivation you wish to bring into being, or some other form of peace, of ease, of brightness. And you can let come into being, cultivated, discovered, created in the way we bring our attention to what's here and now in the body, in the heart, in the activity of the intellect and mind. At this point, deep into the meditation, it would be helpful just to check in with the level of energy or energetics. It's possible to have calmed ourselves into a comfortably numb dullness, almost sleep. What would it be like to wake up to brighten? Or we might be agitated, waiting for the end, planning, leaning ahead. And that language can also be helpful just to check, am I leaning forwards, am I holding back? And if we're not in a posture that doesn't allow it, like reclining or sitting against the back of a chair, just check with that alignment of the spine. Is it actually in best alignment for the remaining minutes of cultivation that we have? The tucking and the lifting of the chin. Find that point that's neither agitated nor deadened, sluggish. You can feel the breath, receive the delicacy of the sounds with a supple body. An open heart and a clear head. Such that we can allow what we wish to cultivate to come through in this moment of awareness and grow. Once more, final time, just checking in with the body now. Just taking in the whole of the body. Tuning in again with the heart. Allowing it to open as much as you wish. Checking in with the head. It's found some clarity, some ease, some release. And lingering for a moment in what it is that you've cultivated, that we've supported each other in cultivating individually and collectively. And with that, keeping your sensitive awareness and your well-guided being, we can transition the meditation, not coming all the way out, but actually bringing these qualities with us. As we change posture, maybe open the eyes, and return to the space together. So the theme that I wanted to speak to today is a bit around this idea of a middle way. And you kind of perhaps could notice it at times in the meditation. You know, we're looking at these qualities that sometimes we're grabbing on, sometimes we're pushing away, and we're finding that middle space in between. You know, it's quite rich, quite alive, quite beneficial for us, beneficial for others. There's also this quality we looked at towards the end of the meditation where, you know, there might be a bit of agitation, forward leaning, getting going, don't you know how busy I am kind of mind, and on the other hand there can be this kind of sleeping, slipping off, drifting away. And it's like, oh, again, finding that middle space between I'm not pushing away and I'm not drifting away, I'm finding this middle space, space I call to myself vibrant tranquility, you know, really alive peacefulness that is available for us, and we can kind of aim towards it and develop that. I think it's interesting to see that there's many middle ways, and whatever's going on, we might find ourselves heading off to the extremes. And the Buddha was constantly encouraging us to find the middle between extremes. And before we go there, I just want to speak a little bit about something that was occurring to me as my mind wandered in the meditation at points. There's been this very opulent coronation going on in the UK today, you know, crowning of a king. And come Tuesday, I'm going to go to Calais and run a meditation retreat connected with the refugees, migrants who are stuck in Calais, facing the riot police for the fact that they're not being allowed to live a full, rich, entitled existence. And many of us live in the middle between these conditions. Yeah, we're not being crowned royalty, and we're not under threat of not being allowed to live our lives. And in that middle space is us here in Gaia House, receiving, participating in the forward rolling of these teachings. And, you know, we exist within societies of vast inequality. And something I've noticed in life is that any time that money gets involved with something precious, it devalues it. And so I just want to speak sensitively around this idea that we have the freedom to support what we truly believe is of benefit in the world. And these teachings should be available to everyone. And, you know, everyone at Gaia House is doing everything they can to make that true, to make that possible. Yeah, these are freedom teachings that will never be behind a paywall for as long as those who know them seek to share them in this way. And so we're freely invited, if we can, to you know, put our shoulder to the wheel of turning this wheel of the Dharma together. And I'll put in a few links that you can use to help support Gaia House and you know, those who come here and share these things. So I have my own little website that I write in, and you can support through there if you wish to support me. No expectation, but it's freely offered, so you can freely respond in your own way. And you can also support Gaia House, and you can also support me through Gaia House if you wish to do it that way. And what's nice about that is it can be a little bit more anonymous. So we all know, you know, the preciousness of generosity, the heart that it places in the center of the teaching, so I'm not going to speak too much to that, but there is a middle way for us, yeah. And that middle way, I think, is the participation. So we have this this path that's been offered to us, freely offered to us. Down through the ages, it was freely offered, discovered, created by the Buddha and those who were teaching the Buddha, and the Buddha discovered particular dimensions and aspects of ways of journeying this path, and each of us in our own way discover, create, uncover ways of walking this path. But a good way of understanding it is it's the path to end dukkha, or path to the end of dukkha. And what does that mean? I was recently with some, I suppose you'd call it colleagues, people who also teach Dharma, teach meditation. We were discussing that. What does this word dukkha mean? And, you know, I feel like I can share this much. We don't all agree. You know, it's like we don't all agree what this word really means. You know, there's no good translation. Nisaro Bhikkhu, who's a great teacher and also a wonderful translator, and, you know, people won't agree with all of each person's choice of words for translation, had a funny phrase that he said about dukkha. One of the translations for dukkha is unsatisfactoriness. Yeah, sometimes it's suffering, sometimes it's stress, sometimes it's pain, sometimes it's unpleasantness, sometimes, you know, it's all kinds of things. Lee Brazenton calls it a bummer. You know, good 70s American hippie. It's a bummer, man. Dukkha is a bummer. And Tenisaro Bhikkhu said, you know, any translation you find of dukkha, it will always be deeper than that. It'll always go beyond that definition. And then he jokingly said, and it will always be unsatisfactory. The translating of dukkha will be unsatisfactory. Translating of dukkha is dukkha. Yeah. So for me, I find the most immediate and also colloquial word that we can use for dukkha is its non-freedom. Yeah. It's the way in which we don't feel free in our body, we don't feel free in our heart, we don't feel free in our mind. That is the experience of dukkha. It's non-freedom. Non-freedom. And we know that. It's hard to define for us personally, but we know it, right? And I'm not saying this is the best translation, but it is clear and useful, right? We're bringing the end to non-freedom, not being free. And what we mean by that, what the Buddha suggested as the way to do that, is finding a middle way between extremes, right? So what we would say then is that dukkha is an extremist's position, yeah, according to the grand peacemaker, the Buddha. Right. When we're in dukkha, we fall into an extreme. Now, this is a path that goes incredibly deep, right? But I think it can also go incredibly wide. And no matter how deep or how far we're going to go, we need to start where we are, right? So is there dukkha in this moment? Is there? Is there dukkha in this moment? Or is there no dukkha in this moment? Yeah. And so what the Buddha would say to us is, there is dukkha in this moment. And if you don't recognize that there's dukkha in this moment, because you won't admit to being an extremist, even though we feel like we're a moderate, like there is a middle here possible. Because that middle is always subtly, just out of view, just out of even the sense of possibility, and we have to come back in, right? And so, you know, here's a teaching that we can look into this. You know, the Buddha gave us a reasonably easy to recall and relatively kind of complete list to explain this. You know, the five hindrances, very commonly known teaching. There's greed, there's aversion, there's restlessness, there's sluggishness of sloth, torpor used to be translated, and there's this quality that we often call doubt. Yeah. There are five hindrances. I like to call them drags, because that's an acronym, DRAGS. D for doubt, R for restlessness, A for aversion, G for greed, and S for sluggish. And they're ways in which we obscure or obstruct freedom. Yeah, when we doubt ourselves, doubt others, and we obstruct, we disavow our capacity to do something here. Yeah, not believing in ourselves, not believing in others. So then we look for the middle. Yeah, we look for the middle between agitating or depleting our energies. We look for the middle between grasping on or rejecting of things. Yeah. So we can kind of take them. The first four are actually pairs, right? As the list of five hindrances commonly kind of comes out, it's kind of the pushing away, or the pulling towards. Yeah. In the most gross level, it's greed or hatred. Yeah. Yeah. Push the hatred, greed, pull on, own it for yourself. But it also, all the hindrances actually dive down to very subtle expressions. You know, like that kind of habitually wanting more of whatever we're currently enjoying. It's kind of taking us from enjoying it. You know, I recognize this happens to me, is that when I'm eating something that's nice, I'm already like looking around thinking, is there more? Instead of really enjoying what's on my plate, what's in my hand, what's on my tongue even. You know, it's like, maybe I'll have another one of these. You know, or we're kind of like a bouncer at a nightclub, guarding our senses against, well, you know, I'm not sure about this. You know, I'm not sure about what this person's saying. I'm not really listening to them. I'm wary of what they're saying, and just like checking it out. Very subtle levels, you know, maybe it doesn't really feel like aversion. Yeah. Or we're not really allowing that sensation to express itself. Oh, I don't like it. I push the tension away that way. So we know that, the push-pull. Yeah. When that's there, there's a level of dukkha that needn't be there. There's a level of peacefulness, there's a level of those qualities that we each mentioned that we could cultivate there that isn't available when we're in that agitated mode. And talking of agitation, we come into the third and the fourth hindrance pairing, this kind of restlessness, sluggishness thing. We're either agitating or we're hampering the coming through of our energies. Yeah. If we think of like a fire, like a stoking of the fire activity that we do, it's kind of like sending sparks up, but probably people are getting, you know, smoke in their face, or there's this kind of stagnating of the fire. Or we've buried it in damp leaves and things like that, and it's not being able to, you know, kind of take care of itself. And so you can kind of feel that restlessness, that agitation, that forward, you know, oh, there's something more for me, it's out there, I've got to go on. or that sluggishness, not really showing up, thinking it's boring, there's nothing to do here, drifting away. Can you feel how that's not freedom? It's not freedom to be that way. It's not fully expressing, showing up, being grounded, but also flexible. Yeah, whatever our metaphor is, the tree, supple tree, or the cat, very restful but also alert. And then the foundation for those is often called doubt, but really it's a lack of faith. We're not confident. We haven't got confidence in ourselves, haven't got confidence in our capacity. And we're not uncertain. We're kind of certain that we, they, or it can't be, can't do. Yeah. Uncertain really makes a lot of sense. It's, I don't know, but let's try. It's more defeatism, it's kind of reticence. Not playing a positive part in what's unfolding here. And there is no neutral stance then, right? What then unfolds is actually these habitual patterns of restlessness or sluggishness, this push, this pull, right? So we have to have faith. And one of the elements that we have to have faith is that the hindrances themselves are activities caused by activities. Right? They don't have their own nature. They possibly do not have an original cause, right? So it's not that kind of uprooting. Got to get to the bottom of where did this really come from? You know, that very likely is just going to be another pattern of aversion or something. Yeah, getting aversive about my aversion is just more aversion. Getting aversive about my greediness is not a resolution to that. Yeah, it's just adding another hindrance. So if we understand, we have faith, this is an activity. It's in some kind of rebirth constellation that I don't need to repeat anymore. Yeah. It's this lovely soulful song came out recently, I Don't Want to Fight Anymore. And it's really, really good. What were they called? Something Shake. Something Alabama Shakes. I Don't Want to Fight Anymore. That would be my top tip of something fun to listen to. And really soulful voice and catchy tune. But what a attitude to have, yeah. I don't want to repeat reactivity. Don't going to react to reactivity. I don't want to fight anymore. The Buddha, the grand peacemaker, might have sung such a song. As the Buddha said, hatred is never appeased by hatred in this world. By non-hatred alone is hatred appeased. This is a law eternal. Hindrances are not uprooted by further hindrances. Non-freedom is not liberated through the actions of non-freedom, but by the cultivation of those very beautiful qualities each of you shared. Yeah. And so we bring in that view, that understanding. Meditation is cultivation. There's possibility of possibilities here. We can play a part. This is the fundamental view we need on our side. It cuts through doubt. No. There is something I can do. There is something I wish to grow. There is something I intend, something I conceive of, something I'm going to put my shoulder to the wheel for. Something I'm going to look for, yeah. Something I'm going to perceive and experience. And so wherever we are in our experience, we can check, is there a hindrance? Is there a drag on experience? A drag in experience? Right now, that we could ease. And the truth is that there always is. Really, there always is. Hindrances are not not something to be ashamed of. They're something very, very natural. They're something to expect. They're just common patterns that happen to all of us. And in fact, they're always occurring, right? That there's hindrances in you, there's hindrances in me right now, right? All of a sudden I might, oh, it's a bit of doubt. Am I making sense? And it's good. Someone who's speaking that has no doubt is probably overconfident, right? But there has to be this middle. It's like, and if I go too far towards it and I'm just now I really am not making sense because I'm so entangled in my doubt that I don't feel the confidence to share with you something. Yeah. And if you didn't have any very subtle greed for me to make some sense and for you to receive some sense from me, you'd stop paying attention, right? If you didn't have some subtle kind of aversion to not being completely free, or not very obviously free, whatever it is for you, why would you bother to do anything? So they're going to be present, but it's like having to constantly find this middle. And that's the encouragement of these teachings, to be unstuck in the middle. Right? Not stuck in the extremes. So the hindrances are common patterns. They happen to all of us, all of the time, unless we're completely awakened. Okay? And even then I would say, and perhaps only if we're completely awakened. I don't know. I don't know what that would even mean, right, that they've gone away. Right? So they're always occurring. The real problem would be then to ignore them. The real problem would be to turn around to the Buddha and say, no, I'm pretty free, you know. You know, I don't need any more of these teachings. I think I get it. The Buddha had that happen to him a few times. Think, yeah, I think I get it now. He would say, say it is not so. Say it not like this. Don't say that. There's a subtler freedom that I wish to share with you. And yet the hindrance lens is actually giving us a biased way of seeing the world. Yeah. We notice this at times, you know, that quality that's taking us away from fully present, fully enjoying, fully supporting, fully liberating. And so what that means is when we recognize there is a hindrance present, now which one is most dominant for me? Is it the doubt? Is it the restlessness? Is it the aversion? Is it the greediness? Is it the sluggishness? What is it? That's why I like the drags. It's really going to just work my way through. D-R-A-G-S. Who's there? Who's there? Oh! Oh, I've actually got a word. It's a rag. I've got restlessness, aversion and greed going on. You know, it's like, you know, you can play, what was that game? Wordle or something with drags. So the next step then is you recognize which one's there and then we try something different. You know, we get unstuck to find the middle. Maybe we change the view, change the conception, change the perception. Right? Common issue for us not being able to get, we're stuck, is that we actually have experiential fusion. Which is to say, we don't have any separation, any mindfulness of what's going on. You know, I'm in the greed, but I'm not aware that I'm in the greed. I'm just chasing after something. Right. So the first step is this kind of, there's a hindrance here. Move into kind of attentional flexibility. There. And then if we notice, let's start with the body. I feel really contracted, really tense. That out-breath. To soothe, to ease. Oh, I actually feel more contracted in my awareness than in my body. It's actually a tightness here. It's the stress. You know, I felt some stress recently and felt really, wow, it's such a small space to be in stress. And you forget about that huge sky above you. You forget about you know, all that landscape around you, forget about the space behind you. But when you recall it, you're no longer reconditioning, rebirthing that constellation. Right? Even if we just say, I'm just going to try and welcome the face to relax, allow the face to relax, allow the shoulders to soften. I've got a minute, I can take a minute to ease, to invite, to relax. Or if we're having that common hindrance that can pop up, particularly in the latter stages of a meditation, but also, you know, between tasks, where you think, I actually feel bored. This is boring. And it's just such an amazing experience to have, isn't it? It's like, wow, the luxury of being bored. And yeah, I really don't want to be bored. There's nothing going on. God, you just pray for that some days. Here I am, you know. Well, let's just stand up and really see what's going on. Well, let's imagine that there is something to stand up for. Because someone somewhere needs us. Well, another one I really like to play with is that I notice I've got the G, I've got the greed, I'm seeking for something more, maybe I'm really fantasizing about getting something. And it's so much fun just to, like, instead of saying, oh, I should not be doing that, I just pretend, oh, I've actually been planning to give this to someone else. You know, I've just been thinking about this for a really long time, but it's a secret present for. Who is it for? I have to remember. And then I find someone who could receive that, who would love to have that. And not only is that a fun way of not chastising myself for having a mind that gets greedy, and my mind does get greedy, then it also creates freedom. It maximizes enjoyment to give away, to be generous, to support others. Is the greatest gift for ourselves as well. Or even just the memory of some generosity really cuts through there. Well, if we flip the other way and we've got lots of aversion, you know, is there something about this being or this condition or something that we could enjoy? You know, I personally was feeling some aversion about the opulence and, you know, all of this to do with the coronation today. I'm not a big fan of that kind of thing. But was there nothing I could be grateful for? That there was a beautiful stage for some of the most fantastic music that humankind has ever created, being performed in some incredible architecture. Wow. Great. And many people enjoying it, really enjoying it, really feeling lifted up. Something spiritual was happening for some people. And there's always some way of turning this around. It's like, oh, I don't like this happening. And there's nothing I can do about it. And that just makes it worse for me. And, you know, I can spiral into that. Or I could practice metta. Or I could actually focus on the beings who I really deeply want to support. I pledge allegiance to those beings who are unrecognized, underloved, underappreciated. That may all beings be adored. So that's what I wanted to share today. I'll pop something in the chat actually. If you want to explore this way of turning around the hindrances and practicing with them in kind of creative ways. There's a few things that I've offered around this in the past, but I wrote a little article about using the awakening factors, which you can find out what they are there if you don't know, and the paramis on my Medium channel that I set up a while ago. media.ngly.de. But yeah, the link's in the Zoom chat, and I'll pop it on the description thing. So yeah, anyway, that's there. And yeah, it's been a real pleasure to be with you today. And if you have any reflections or sharings you'd like to bring into the space, you're very welcome. Thanks, Ashley. And I think that's a really rich, it's a rich point, and it could become a sticking point for these teachings. You know, if we take, so some people might use reactivity, as you've used it there, as a definition of dukkha. Like, and all the hindrances are kind of variants of reactivity. I don't know if it would actually fully stand up as an argument or not, but like, let's say that, you know, you could say that. So therefore, with that in mind, the path of practice is then the ending of reactivity, right? Just some weird kind of condition of non-reactivity. Okay, we could take that and we could kind of run with it and say, okay, that's good. But then what I end up with is, well, I don't have any reactions. Now, is a response still a bit of reactivity? Is that kind of just subtle reactivity? It's like, oh, something's arisen in me when I see, you know, poverty, or I see, you know, someone treating people unequally. You know, you mentioned feminism and this kind of thing. It's like, well, hang on, no, that isn't okay. Well, no, that's a reaction. I mustn't have reactions. I must accept everything. Now, accepting everything about oneself might be very effective. Like, it might get us like maybe 99.9% of the way there within ourselves, because the more that we accept ourselves, perhaps that quality is dissolved. You know, but if we then take it outside and we say, well, I just accept that the world is unfair. You know, I don't think that sounds like a very sensible way of living our life, right? But if we take a definition like, you know, actually the hindrances are expressions of non-freedom, and this is an expression of non-freedom, right, which is that someone is speaking in a way which is oppressive to others, and we recognize for ourselves, well, when I do that, that makes me feel awful, and it makes other people feel awful. So right now, this person, whether they consciously recognize it or not, is probably feeling a bit awful about what they're doing. Right, and they're in a cycle of awfulness, right? So we have that sense with hindrances, they recreate, they're going on, you know, they're in a rebirth constellation. So what's my next step, right? This is the kind of a live question that you were asking there. So, okay, so what do we do? And I think that what we have to do is recognize that, you know, probably compassion is going to be our outcome most of the time, right? A compassionate act. But what does compassion look like here? Right, and it's very likely something more than we initially think it looks like. Like, actually to say, okay, first I need to generate love in myself that I'm able to put it out there. Compassion is an expression of love, however we might kind of interpret that, right? It's not an expression of hatred. Okay, this is not going to be stilled through hatred. Putting down others, feminism, whatever it is, right, is not an expression of love. I don't need another expression of, you know, non-love to meet that. So lots of love in my heart, but actually to say, I don't think that's the best that we can do, you know, however we're going to put that across, right? There's something more for us as humankind. We have to find that way. And what that's going to look like, how that's going to come through, it's going to be very dependent on the state of your heart and mind, the state of their heart and mind. It might be something we have to circle back to when we've really cooled down, but we make sure that it does get addressed. You know, all of that kind of territory. So, you know, I can't tell you what you should do, but like, I can tell you, like, I think this is in the range, the field of possibilities that the teachings and, you know, I think each of our individual experiences point towards. So, So maybe I'll pass back to you. Is there anything you want to add to that? Yeah. Yeah, and I think probably one of our most important roles as a Sangha is to find that capacity when we see something, racism, feminism, you know, prejudice of whatever kind, is just to be able to say, I really don't agree. You know, in a way that's not like, you said what you think, now I've said what I think. Now we don't have to fight, but I really don't see it that way. You know. And that doesn't mean that I think you're a rubbish human being, but I don't see it that way. And I guess that's, I would say that's kind of our role, to discover how we do that. Because we are contributing to the world. There is no neutral mode, right? We're either accepting something, or we're fighting against something, or we're, you know, we're a part of the world. Not apart from the world, can't be. Yeah. We are cultivating our culture together. Is there anything else anyone would like to share? Can be a reflection, can be a question, can be experience. Everything's welcome. Beautiful. Beautiful reflection, and yeah, such a, yeah, really rich and lovely to hear. And also, yeah, really just want to emphasize that quality that you're saying. It's like, not also that middle way between being kind of perfect and imperfect, you know, in our exploration, that we're going to try stuff and we're going to be creative, and that means we're going to be taking risks, which means we're learning to do something, which means we have to embrace the mistakes, you know. And I think, you know, one of those middle spaces for me is like, I don't want to get it wrong, you know, and then I don't do anything. And it's like, and that beautiful wish to get it right means I'm also going to appreciate getting it wrong, because that's one of the best things we can do. Like, we're going to run the experiment and it turns out my theory was completely incorrect, but I've learned that now, and now I'm going to move forwards and I'm going to try something else. And like saying something soothing to this person when they're angry only made them more angry. It's like, okay, right, so I've learned in that situation when they seem to be that way, soothing doesn't work, and maybe actually something more forthright, or like, enough, we're not talking anymore. He's like, oh yeah, that worked. That really kind of, you know, so we're learning, we're experimenting. And it's like, oh, that was the compassionate way. But I don't know until I try. And I absolutely have to be willing to make mistakes. And yeah, as you were sharing, you know, and wanting to help and support and make a contribution to these sessions. And I just want to say something that I generally kind of say around Dana. I was quite brief around the Dana today. It's like, this continuation of our practice, this willingness to do this, this is Dana, right? This is receiving the teachings and giving back, right? This is Dana. This is to bring them into the world, into our relationships, start to change, as we say, you know, starting to shape the world. This is also Dana, right? It's not a financial thing, Dana, right? It's definitely not a retribution, a repayment, or any of those kinds of things. It's not even a donation, you know. It's let our beings be shaped in ways that contribute to participate, you know, contribute, participate, all of these kinds of language, or get closer to Dana than the forms in which we might speak about it. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of name that breadth of the thing. Thanks for your reflection. Yes, Alison, would you like to share with us? Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So when the, it's a, I mean, it's an interesting exploration. This idea of like compassion has, has no reactivity in it. Yeah. So it's interesting that the ka in karuna is like the ka in karma. It's to do with activity. So compassion that's not an activity, is an activity in relationship to dukkha, actually, to non-freedom, to entanglement, suffering, painfulness for people, their condition, and it wants to relieve it. And it's possible, and I'm totally fine with that being defined as an activity that is not a reactivity, but it's an activity which is stimulated by something that is not okay. Yeah. Right. And so it, however each of us wants to kind of pass those words, pass them, give them meaning, give them interpretation, is like what that means for us. It means that we actually feel that painfulness and we want to relieve it. Yeah. Now, is that reactivity or not? It's up to you, right? It's totally up to you to decide. But like, it's a movement forward that is stimulated by a condition in the world that is not okay. It's not acceptance. So what for us then becomes the opposite word to reactivity? So compassion is this kind of acting from love, not acting from hatred, which would then be, anger, rejection, aversion, all of that. Beautiful. Yeah, and something that I also share in that article, it's called Intending to Meditate and Meditating with Intent. Which is to do with those kinds of things, is actually seeing the potential to take aversion, which is a very low kind of quality to be engaged in, and lift it up to the elevated, to the beautiful kind of quality of compassion. So what a waste just to be hating on hatred when we could really, lift up and open our hearts, let our hearts sing through with compassion. In the same way, it's like, well, I'm just taking this whatever it is, let's say some materiality, and I'm greeding after it. What a waste, what a lowly way to live when we could lift that up into maybe just appreciation that it's out there, or the generosity of giving it to others. And so, yeah, and I think that elevation, that lifting up, that upgrade, that renovation of all of these common unfoldings, and we realize, well, that's freedom for me, it's freedom for others, and it's, yeah, positive contribution to the world. Yeah, thank you. Maybe that's a good note for us to disperse into the world and share our wisdom and compassion with others, and practice in ways to support ourselves, support others, support the world. Thank you once again for your presence, and look forward to seeing you again along the way.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.